Welcome to another edition of the Superflate NBA Show. Your Yves Klein of NBA shows, because who wouldn't want a color blue named after them? Welcome back, everybody. I'm your host, Joe Borelli, as always, coming at you from my studio in Brooklyn, New York. It is Sunday, May 7th, 2017, and it's a rainy, really cold. Well, it's not rainy anymore, but it was a really cold day in New York. It sucks. It shouldn't be this cold May 7th. I like the heat, man. I like the heat. How's it going, everybody? A couple quick ways to get in touch with the show. You can listen along on Dash Satellite Radio every Tuesday from noon to 1 o'clock Pacific, and I think 3 to 4 Eastern, or is it 4 to 5 or something like that? I still can't figure this out. And then I think it plays again later in the evening. But anyway, you can follow there. You can follow along on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network if you want the show in podcast form. You can tweet at the show at Superflate Pod. You can tweet at me personally at Joe Borelli. Although I warn you, if you do that, you might get a little bit of a liberal jargon. Although I do it on the regular Superflate podcast too, because, you know, I'm an idiot that way. Sorry, I can't keep my politics away from my sports talk. But you know what? If you're listening, you probably enjoy that anyway. You can email the show at thesuperflatepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow along on Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, and rate and review and all that happy horse shit. Oops, sorry, I did it again. Anyway, what's up, everybody? So, should we talk about New York? Should we talk about the crazy things that you see and hear and smell on the subway in New York? Yeah, why not? I was riding the train home from work this week, right? After a really long, busy week. It's like, it's that time of year where the job I do is just incredibly busy. And so, get to the train, have a seat, I'm relaxing, and, you know, everybody on the train is tired. I think it was like 8 o'clock at night when I finally got to the train after work to this particular day. I'm sitting on the train, I'm tired, but I'm like playing a little whatever matching numbers game on my phone and just chilling out, minding my own business. It's a pretty packed train, so I was lucky enough to get a seat. And then there was a gentleman right to the left of me. Directly, I should say, to the left of me, who also was fortunate enough to get a seat. He had been on there a while, apparently, and, you know, he was riding into Brooklyn as well from Manhattan. And, you know, train opens, some people get on. There's a girl standing in front of me. There's an older woman sitting to the left, directly, well, across to the left of me. And we made eye contact, and there's a reason we made eye contact. First, the younger woman standing in front of me was laughing, could not stop laughing. I mean, I totally understood. I was kind of snickering myself. And then later on in the train ride, the older lady, woman, sitting, you know, to my left across from me was also looking at me and laughing. And I was also laughing back and like shaking my head in like disbelief and cracking up. And the reason is because the person sitting left of me, directly to my left, this gentleman, kept falling asleep in his seat and just leaning his head on my shoulder. No matter how many times I moved my shoulder, and I didn't want to be a rude jerk, you know, but no matter how many times I moved, he would just like wake up for a quick second and fall back asleep on my shoulder again. Just like full on laying his head on my shoulder. And like, it's fine, except for that I'm a little bit weirded out when people touch me and I don't like it. Particularly when strangers fall asleep on me, because I don't know what's going on with them. I don't know if they have, I may be a little bit of a germaphobe, but even more than that, I get really nervous when people notice me. I'm sitting on a train full of people and there's at least two people noticing and laughing and looking at me and just like shaking their heads. And I'm laughing along as well and shaking my head. It was fun. It was in a weird way because it was like one of those community moments that you don't generally have on the train, or one of those community moments that you don't generally have with complete strangers anywhere. It happens more in New York, I think, because of the proximity and closeness of all of us to one another. It's very bonding in a weird way. So that community aspect of it, I really enjoyed. It was nice to make eye contact with people and make sort of friends and laugh at a thing together that was happening. The only problem was it made me uncomfortable because it was happening to me. And I felt really weird about it because there's obviously attention on me now. I mean, people are laughing at the guy, but they're also looking at me and laughing because, you know, it's happening to me, and it made me really uncomfortable. So at some point, I guess I just like slapped the guy on the knee. I was like, come on, buddy, let's, you know, and he woke up and I felt really bad, but he woke up and he's like, he looked at me first. He looked like he was really confused. Then he looked like he wanted to fight. And then he was like, realized what had happened, that he had just been leaning on me. And he was like, oh, so sorry. Sorry. I was like, it's no problem. It's okay. It's fine. He stayed awake for another good 10 minutes and then it started all over again. And oh my God, I'm like, this is hilarious, but not so much. And then, you know, one of the girls got off. So then she didn't notice anymore and she wasn't laughing, but the older woman, she rode home almost the entire way I did. She got off a couple stops before me. And I, you know, again, I feel bad. People are tired. People in New York work really, really hard. And I'm sure this gentleman was working really hard during his job, and just he could not keep his eyes open, and I felt really bad, and I didn't want to interrupt his sleep, but at the same time, my shoulder is not a pillow. Anyway, as if that's not bad enough. At some point, another girl gets on, sits next to me. She's an attractive younger lady. It's, you know, it's good. It's fine to sit next to attractive people. Everybody in New York is an attractive person, but, you know, no matter what shape or size you are. And she's sitting there, and then this other guy gets on, and he has standing room only. He just got done shopping at Trader Joe's, and he plopped his groceries in front of me, and while the guy to my left is trying not to fall asleep on me, the guy in front of me is standing there with two bags full of groceries and really smelly feet. And I'm stuck between a guy whose feet are so uncontrollably smelly. Like, how can you, by the way, how do you not know if your feet smell that bad? If your feet smell that bad, how do you not know? How do you not buy some odor eaters? Like, I would know. I wear socks when I wear shoes because if I don't, my feet will stink, right? My shoes will smell gross. I used to work with a dude who had uncontrollably smelly feet, but it turns out that he would just sleep with his shoes on and never change his socks. So it's his own damn fault. But it's really bad. It was, and I'm like, you have groceries there. There's food there. And like, there's a guy falling asleep on my left. And there's a guy standing in front of me with the worst feet in the world. I'm like dying here. It was one of the longest train rides in the world home from work that evening when I had already worked so many hours overtime. You know, I don't know why. I'm not really complaining. The thing is, like, despite all this, I still love the city that I live in. I still love to have these communal moments that, you know, anybody who lives in New York can relate to these things. I feel bad. I understand if people are tired. I don't really understand if your feet stink, especially if you're just a hipster. That's just gross, man. Just, like, change your shoes. Change your socks. Do something. Like, you're shopping at Trader Joe's. You can afford another pair of shoes. Not that Trader Joe's is all that expensive. But anyway, like, take care of yourself. Take a bath. Do something. The young lady next to me, who's very attractive, that's sitting here now, that you could probably want to be impressing, is not impressed by your smelly feet. In fact, her head is turned in the opposite direction, so she doesn't have to smell your feet. And actually, this is another thing. Like, I'm very insecure. So I was thinking, oh my God, I hope she doesn't think that smell is me. Anyway, smelly feet guy, change your shoes. Falling asleep guy, I hope you get some rest. These are the things in New York. But in the meantime, I'm going to talk to my good friend David Fernandez of the Inside the Cylinder podcast on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, and Dash Radio, and Detroit Bad Boys on the SB Nation blog. So David's coming right up, and right after these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey guys, I'm Byron James.
And I'm Michael Keith, and we are the Fuzz NBA Podcast.
That's right, we come from the land down under. Here in Sydney, Australia, we might be 942 miles away from any actual NBA action or a violent 22-hour ride with United Airlines, but we can assure you, we spend more time watching the game, talking about the game, and analysing box scores than we do our own wives' box
scores. Plus, one time Byron shared an ice cream with Joe Ingles.
It was actually boysenberry in a tub. It was delicious.
Anyway, we hope you can join us.
We're the Fuzz NBA Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Or find us at www.thefuzznba.com.
Anyway, back to the show.
Today's sponsor of the Superflight Podcast is Draft Daily Fantasy App. If you play Daily Fantasy, you should be playing on Draft, because your chances of winning are nearly three times better than they are on FanDuel or DraftKings. I'm not kidding. The data backs it up. Almost 90% of players lose on DraftKings, and on FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and you're not spending hours a day on fantasy lineups, Draft gives you the best odds at winning. On Draft Daily Fantasy app, you do a simple snake draft just like at the beginning of your season-long fantasy league. You can do as many drafts as often and whenever you want. They last for just one day and they take only minutes to complete. So download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code ALMIGHTY100 when you download to get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code ALMIGHTY100. That's ALMIGHTY100 to get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Okay. Now back to the show. So I'm so out of it today. I've got like, I don't know if it's allergies or what, but I keep getting like this sinus thing. Like my head is going to explode. So I'm taking like Claritin, God. And I feel like I'm on like another planet right now. So this could,
that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. So it could be an interesting podcast.
You just pass out halfway through.
Yeah.
I'll just keep it going.
Yeah, you talk. Hello, show. I'll listen. How's that?
All right. Sounds good. I'll lull you to sleep.
Yeah. Cool. That sounds like a plan. Welcome back to the show, man. Welcome back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, man. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I've been on somebody else's podcast in forever.
Well, you know, it's because you're big time now and you have your own.
Oh, woohoo.
I'm going to take all the responsibility for that.
Yeah, no, I'll take it.
No,
I mean, you can take it.
I'm kidding.
You're causing damage to people's earbuds because of it. So,
hey, don't blame me for that. Anyway, let's talk about some playoffs. Did you get to watch the game last night? Utah versus Golden State.
I did. I watched some of the second half. Just because you know, I had some other things going on at the time, but I did catch the second half. I saw, you know, it's just one of those games where it might be 7 points, but it's the Warriors, so you never really feel like it's safe. Like they're never even up. Like the Jazz have not been up for, I mean, I could probably look it up how long they've had a lead in this series. It's, you know, very minimal, if anything.
For sure. And
it's something where if you're down by 7 to the Warriors, it still feels like you're down by 20.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're up by, you know, 4 or 7 or something like that, it kind of feels like you're tied.
Yeah.
So I don't know. With them, it's just like, it's just kind of depressing just to see like, oh, that's cute. The Warriors are, you know, they have a 7-point lead on you right now. Well, it's going to be 15 in about, you know, 30 seconds. So
yeah.
get ready for that.
Truly. I think at half they went, the Jazz was up by, I think, 10. But yeah, you're right. The lead never felt safe. The distance between 7 and the distance between 30 is nothing. Like the Warriors will just put you down by that many in a heartbeat. And of course, they lost the game by how many? 20? Something like that?
Yeah, you know, yesterday, I believe it was 11.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. I should check the box score that I have sitting open on my desktop right now.
Yeah, no, they were, I mean, it was,
yeah, 102 it was still to 91. So, yeah.
It was also really sad too. And you know, I'm coming from this from a Pistons angle. So, you know, I have no room to talk about other teams' success or other teams' fan bases or really anything like that. But I remember at one point, I think the lead was around 12 or 11 points with 2 minutes left to go in the game. And I think Joe Johnson was bringing the ball up or something. And like the crowd in Utah was going crazy. Mm-hmm. And they were like really excited. It's like, you're not getting any closer to this. Like this game is over. So I don't know. Like you might feel like you're still in this game, but you are 100% not.
Yeah.
So,
and you know what? Credit to Utah fans, dude. Like good way,
yeah,
to
for
be
sure.
Way to support your team. Like if you were there, I'm sure it was a lot of fun right up until they lost, you know,
of course,
which
yeah.
is demoralizing. Like there's no way. I don't even. So, you know, the Warriors are just too good. We saw it last night, even when Steph Curry wasn't hitting. I think he hit 1 3-point shot in the game. And even when all of their guys aren't on, you still have Kevin Durant, who just went off last night and won the game for them. Like, I don't know what anyone else in the league is expected to do here, really. We have...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that, like, you can totally see the showdown coming. Like, in the East, you have the Cavs, and we'll get there. And in the West, you have the Warriors, and I honestly think, and I didn't think this at the beginning of the playoffs, but they legitimately could go 4-4-4, you know, or or as they say, fo-fo-fo, up until the championship, you know. I really think they're going to get there. I don't think anybody's going to give them a problem. They just have too many weapons. They can shoot from anywhere. They're one of the best passing teams in the league, if not the best passing team. And even when they're not, even when you have to go ISO, you have Kevin Durant, who is one of the best ISO players in the game. What were you going to say?
What I was going to say, just more about the fear of the Warriors and just kind of the craziness that is this team. I was looking at the box score, and you see, 9 points from Draymond Green, 7 points from Zaza, which is fine. That's what you'll get from him.
Yeah.
Six points from Klay Thompson on 1 of 9 shooting. Then you look at the bench, 4 points, 2 points, 2 points. And then, Andre Iguodala had 11, which was solid.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you have three players in double figures, usually that's not a bad thing for the other team. Like, it sounds like there's it just seems like that wouldn't be enough scoring to get the job done.
Right.
But then all of a sudden you look up and it's like, oh, well, Kevin Durant had 38 and, Steph Curry just chipped in a nice clean 23 and you won by double digits. So kind of scary. Like any single night, one of these guys can go off and just kind of take the load off for the other guy. And I don't know. It's just, I don't know how you can contend with that because nobody else really has that kind of firepower.
And this is a little bit off topic, but like, it's really not fair. I hate the consolidation of power in the NBA. Like, I know they were trying to eliminate this with the CBA, but they did exactly the opposite. And nobody can contend with the Warriors right now. I mean, maybe the Cavs, maybe, but we'll see. It's just, there's too much talent on one team. You look down the roster, the entirety of that roster, they're just loaded. I don't know what you're supposed to do to contend with them. Really. I mean, I feel bad for the Jazz, and I was watching the game last night. They're a good team. I underrated them at the beginning of the season. I didn't think they'd be this good. And Gobert, they had him cooking last night. By the way, I love the way he plays. He tries to rip the rim off the backboard every time he dunks. He's just like, give me that thing. It's a lot of fun. I know nobody can see what I just did there, but it was like mimicking hanging on the rim. Yeah, I was grabbing the rim. And they've got a lot of talent, but they're nowhere near competing. And it's just like, what do you do? I hate that the rest of the league doesn't really have a shot. Even maybe the Rockets, we think, or San Antonio, and I'm getting way off the beaten path here, but maybe you start to think that maybe they could contend with them, but they can't. Nobody can. I don't think anyone can give them a legitimate shot.
I think, kind of going back to your point of like the passing of this team, and I don't want to, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more, even just when we're talking about the Warriors. I think there is something to the fact that this is more than just a collection of talent. They just have something else going on there where, they just know each other so well. The rhythm of this team is so kind of just ingrained in every single player. They just know where they're going to be. They just make the right moves. They're unselfish. That's more of a cultural type of thing for me because, you just need those types of guys to be able to produce these types of results. Like you need a Draymond that's going to be, in the beginning or in the middle of the season earlier this year when Kevin Durant, it was like a late game situation and Kevin Durant kind of did some ISO stuff that you would normally see him doing in OKC. And then there was this, I guess I'll just for the sake of the moment, a kerfuffle over on the bench between Draymond and Kevin Durant to say, no, that's not the right move to do. You need to pass in that situation or you need to go rescreen Steph Curry or whatever the situation was.
Mm-hmm.
And the Warriors ended up losing that game. And it's just something like that where there's so much accountability on this team and so much unselfishness that I do think that coaching and management and, everything from the top down deserves a lot of credit in that arena. Just because that's so difficult to do and it's so hard to kind of manage egos in the NBA. So I think it is a little bit more than just a collection of talent just because it's because we've seen super teams before, a la the 2004 Lakers with, Malone, Shaq, Kobe, Gary Payton. Now they're a little bit older, but it was still not as good of a league at that time. And they didn't win, and they were a collection, four Hall of Famers. So I think that there is something to just the culture of the Warriors. I don't really understand it. It just looks like you can't contend with it.
Yeah, really. I mean, and it's pretty, it speaks a lot to the culture, as you were saying. If you can have your guys, like Kevin Durant's a superstar, and if you can have your guys yelling at Kevin Durant because he's not playing the team way and he buys in, that's culture, man. That's like, I mean, of course, winning, you know, will create a culture, right? But still,
sure. Yeah,
but they all bought in. But then that brings me to a thought, like Steve Kerr is going to be out for the rest of the playoffs, right? He may potentially not come back at all. And it seems like at first it would seem that, wow, that's going to be a huge blow to them. Maybe if anything could derail them, it would be the lack of Steve Kerr. It would be their, you know, their main guy, their head coach, their guy who has built this whole thing with them. If he's out, that changes everything. Like maybe the culture will start to fall apart. Maybe the mindset will get a little weaker. Maybe they won't share the ball like they've been. Maybe they won't play team basketball. But it seems like they are not skipping a beat. And it just kind of goes to the, it kind of speaks to the idea that, like, while a really good coach is obvious, like Pop is a really good coach, right? They're responsible for calling your plays and for getting guys to work together. But at some point, when you have this much talent, they're basically just caretakers, right?
Yeah, I don't think that there's, and honestly, a lot of the NBA is kind of like that. I think it's more so about the culture that you set up before the game, mm-hmm. than it is actually in-game management. Because even when you're listening to someone mic'd up, and you're listening into the huddle, it's like, hey, guys, we got to keep doing what we've been doing. You know, don't let the league get comfortable. It's just like the most cliche BS. It's like, okay, these guys know this stuff. Like, you're not, other than, you know, an excellent Brad Stevens, you know, out of bounds play, or something like that, or you know, obviously Popovich being able to work with different guys and be able to kind of get them elevated for these guys that you've never heard of before. Other than those types of like kind of glaring, you know, mastermindery. I don't really know what I'm trying to say
masterful
there, but
strokes maybe. I don't know. Yeah,
yeah. Or even, you know, like the D'Antoni system to set up a system like that. You know, there are feats in coaching that are very impressive, but you're right. I think at a certain point, when you do have a collection of all-stars together, you don't necessarily need a coach out there to kind of tell them. They know what they have to do, just like that example I just said about Draymond saying to Kevin Durant, this is what we're supposed to do. You know that this is what we're supposed to do to win. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I don't think they need Steve Kerr to win this thing at all.
You know, culture really is what wins you games, and winning is what builds your culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's a chicken and the egg argument, right? Like.
Right.
It really is. I've never really thought about it like that, but, you know, what necessitates the other thing? And yeah, winning helps everything. It cures everything.
Winning cures everything, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have, you know, looking back at Michael and Scottie and then Shaq and Kobe, there's an element to being able to manage those egos, especially like Michael, who's got one of the biggest egos, and that Kobe-Shaq thing. Even I was so young when that was going on. But even I knew that it was just like, man, that seems toxic over there. Like between those two, like, those guys don't like each other and they still were able to kind of put it all aside and get the win. So, you know, I mean, I'm not a big Phil Jackson fan just with all of his like Zen BS and all of the, you know, he's just the kind of stuff that he pulls, in New York right now. Kind of, I don't know. He just, it's all about the Phil. It's like the Phil show more so than anything else.
Oh yeah. That's a good way
which
to put
is,
it.
Yeah, and it's annoying, and it's, you know, if I was a Knicks fan, I would be livid with that situation. I would want him gone immediately. But you know, there is not everyone would have been able to manage those types of egos, I don't think.
Yeah, that's fair, and that is the thing that people point to when they're saying.
But is he the best coach, right?
Are
you an ego manager or are you a coach? No, I don't think he's I don't think he's like the best coach of all time. I think he's a great coach. Obviously, he's got all the rings and everything like that. But
this is going to sound like craziness, but I actually think Brad Stevens is a better coach right now. Like,
it's so early though. Like,
yeah,
it's
I know,
so
but I'm
early.
Just saying. Like, but you can really see his coaching method, like the way he. Yeah, all right. We'll talk about the Celtics in a bit. I'm saving that series for the last because it's the best right now. Anyway, I don't know. I'm just thinking about Utah and like, what are they going to do after this season? You know, they have some serious decisions to make, and if this is where their team tops out right now, I feel like at once it's too soon for this to happen. And like they haven't reached their potential as a team. They still need more time to grow, but they've got some serious contract issues coming up. Like Gordon Hayward, they're going to have to pay him. If they can get him to stay, he's 27 right now and he's in his prime. Do you give that guy the max? I mean, I think
I do.
Yeah, I think yes is the obvious answer, yeah. But is he your best? If you're paying him the max, is he a max player? Like, is he the guy that's going to take you to contend with the Warriors?
I don't think. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a waiting game, right? So it's something where Zach Lowe talks about this quite a bit, like with the Raptors. Like, you just keep running it back. And this is what he was saying before the whole Clippers debacle of, you know, this season and another injury to Blake. Run it back. You never know what's going to happen. It'll just take one slip on the floor, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, you're a champion.
Right. He talks about yourself in position. You have to be in position to take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah. And also, you know, the financial side and the money side, the business side of the NBA, too. You know, I think if you don't re-sign Hayward, then you're kind of starting over. You're not going to make the playoffs next year. So on the financial side, I think it makes sense to max him out too, because then you're going to be still selling out arenas and you'll have the fervor and you'll have, you know, a playoff team for years to come. So, yeah, I mean, I think for all of those reasons, A, you run it back. You have young talent. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, Gordon Hayward, which is like a top five, you know, small forward in the league. So, you know, and at a very difficult position, and he can defend, he can play, you know, he's great on the offensive side.
And that's not nothing. Yeah, that's not nothing. Like, if you have a top five small forward and a top three center, maybe top two center in the league, yeah, you've got a good start. But what do they do about, like, you know, George Hill? He's getting up there in years. He's an unrestricted free agent.
You got a lot of point guards, too.
Yeah. I mean, and they, you know, they've gotten nothing out of Dante Exum, really. So I know when they drafted him, they were hoping that he was going to be, it seemed like he fell in their lap and he was going to be maybe their point guard of the future. But he's shown nothing, which is really disappointing. It just goes to show how unscientific the draft really is.
I know.
The unknowns, like Paul George was picked 10th overall and he's a superstar, you know?
Yeah. Giannis.
What was he, 13th?
He was something like that, 13th, 15th or something. He was down there.
And he's
Draymond Green, right?
Like, yeah, all these guys. Yeah. Oh, Isaiah Thomas. He was the last pick of the draft.
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas, yeah.
It's just not an exact science. So
Ben Wallace was undrafted.
Yeah, right. So you just never know. There are diamonds in the rough all over the place. I mean, I think, they absolutely have to run it back, right? If they can get Gordon Hayward to come back, I mean.
Yeah.
They can
that's
offer
the
him.
Question. Yeah. I think that's the bigger question is, does he come back? If you were him, would you re-sign with the Jazz, or would you maybe go and buddy up with the Celtics and you know, go play with Brad Stevens and go kind of start a legacy in Boston, which is a great, you know, sports town to do it in?
Yeah. I mean, I can see from his point of view where that would be really tempting, right? Like, you would be beloved in Boston. Like, they really, mm-hmm. if you're going to say one good thing about Boston sports fans, they really take to their teams. They really love their stars. They are loyal to a fault, to the point where they'll fight other players from other teams in the middle of the street, even though the other player is like 7 foot.
I'm just saying. Just knocking people out left and right.
Yeah, exactly. No names, Okafor. But but yeah, I mean, I could see that as being like a destination for him. But think about this, too. Utah, have you ever been to Salt Lake City?
No, and I don't want to go.
It's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful town, man. But they are absolutely right when they talk about no nightlife. Do you know they use these things? Like when they're giving you a shot, they have a thing attached to the nozzle where it will give you exactly 1 ounce or one liter.
Like,
what is that? I can't get a legitimate drink here. And they're charging you so much money. And they close everything early. There's no nightlife there. So I could see.
They have a sulfur-ridden lake in, like, the center of their city. Like, it sounds like you're not supposed to go there. Like, it sounds like in the cosmos, like, you don't build your civilization around the sulfur lake. Like, you keep it moving. So, like, you know, I'm sorry, Utah fans out there that are listening. But, you know, I don't have a want to be there. I mean, I would go to a game or something, sure. Yeah. But I'm not flying out there for that.
The only thing that would also deter me is there's so many Mormons.
Mormons turn this one off. No, I agree. I agree.
No offense to any Mormons. I'm equally anti all religions, so I'm not singling you out. Excuse me. Anyway, anything else you want to say about this series? It's intriguing in that the Utah has a lot of decisions and they're a young, up and coming, we hope, team, and hopefully they can run it back.
For me, I just want, you know, I really hope Utah brings back, you know, actually I wouldn't mind if Gordon Hayward left and went to Boston or something like that. But, you know, I like Utah being a good team, and I like that there's like another team in the mix that's kind of exciting that you kind of have to watch out for. So, you know, for those purposes, I would hope that they bring him back. But other than that, you know, I think it's just kind of this series to me has been the whole time leading up to the series. It's been, yes, you know, they're going to sweep the Jazz. And I was like, man, I've watched the Jazz quite a few times this year and they looked really, really good. I think they can get one. And it's like, no, nope. they really can't. Like, that's how good the Warriors are. So that's really it for that series for me.
Yeah. And I think last night was their best shot, really. They were up at half and, you know, and then my illegal feed cut out. So I didn't get to watch the rest of it, but whatever. Anyway, let's move on. Houston and San Antonio. How about that? You want to talk about this series?
Yeah. What you got on this one?
Well, you know, I was talking to, not to name drop, but I was talking to J.E. Skeets last week. And, you know, we talked to, that's right.
You were. That was awesome.
Did you hear it? Did you like it? It was good.
I did. Shout out J.E. Skeets.
Yeah. Good guy. That was a lot of fun. We were talking about Houston and San Antonio briefly. And I was saying, you know, I think he had picked Houston to win this series. And I think a lot of other people were thinking that Houston was going to win this series because they have so much firepower and they can just put their guys, or they could put Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge in like pick and roll and just get to the rim at will. And I warned that if there's one team you should be cautious about, it's the San Antonio Spurs, because if anybody can figure out what to do, it's Pop. And it seems like, talk about adjustments, man. He has made some like amazing adjustments on this team. But yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts about the series? What would you like to say?
So I, you know, just like what you were saying, I can't believe the adjustment that has worked so well for San Antonio. One thing that I noted kind of in that first game when the Rockets blew them out by 30, you know, it just seemed like what you were saying, either in the pick and roll situation with the bigs or in James Harden's just mastery at collapsing defenses and kicking out, like, just to see like Pau Gasol and to see LaMarcus Aldridge just reaching their like outreached arms, trying to block, like just to close out on the shooters. It just looked so futile to me. I was like, yeah. Oh man, I didn't realize like Houston was this much more, you know, just that the firepower would be so telling in this series that it was going to be this much of a problem for San Antonio. So for San Antonio to do what they've done, kind of, you know, playing Simmons a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think he's been playing like 15, 20 minutes a game or so after that, just to play. I think what they've also got. And then also, you know, with Tony Parker going out and then them not really missing a beat.
Yeah.
It's been kind of crazy, honestly. It's not something that I would have expected. Even though I love Pop, even though like Kawhi is definitely top three player in the league, you know, it's still crazy to me that they've been able to pull this off. And also, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, give him credit. For everyone that you know, always kind of shits on LaMarcus Aldridge, he, you know, dropped 26 in the last game on, you know, 12 of 20 shooting. So yeah. I'm impressed.
I'm one of those people that shits on Aldridge. I'm like, I mean, he looked, all right, to be fair, like, I don't dislike him as a player. I just think he has a very limited game and he gets way too much credit for it. He has the highest release, like the most unblockable shot in the league. And that's a really beautiful shot, but it's also sort of exactly the same thing in a bigger body. Not exactly. But very similar to what DeMar DeRozan is doing in Toronto, right? His mid-range game is amazing. It's a beautiful thing to watch. The mid-range game, though, is dead. Like, there's no room for the mid-range in the NBA anymore. It's all...
Don't tell the Detroit Pistons that.
Sorry.
Leading the league in mid-range attempts. Trust me. I know it's dead.
Yeah, I guess you do. Sorry, buddy. Sorry.
All good.
Anyway, so, but like, listen, I like Aldridge. I think he's a fine player. I don't think he's your top. I don't think he's one of your top three best players on a championship team, maybe four. And what he does really well. But You know, I also just think he's fat.
I saw that in the write-up. I was like, I don't think that at all, but
really?
Okay.
I don't know. I think he may have slimmed down, but at the beginning of the season, like, it was just my running joke. He was wearing clothes that were so baggy, like straight out of the 90s. It looked like, yeah. It just looked like he had so much girth. Like he was eating way too much Taco Bell or something. I don't know. But his knee's been bothering him. So, you know, and give him credit. He really, I think they held him to 4 points in that first game when they beat him by, you know, when the Houston Rockets beat the Spurs by 30, and he was just ineffective. They put him in the pick and roll, turned him around, and he couldn't cover anything. But he's really come on the last two games. And then I was also going to mention, you're right about Tony Parker. And I think naturally the reaction to Tony Parker's out for the season, even though he hasn't been great this season because he's getting up there in years. And I think he's probably going to be done in the next year or two, right? If not this year. Yeah. They have DeJounte Murray, who I think he only played 15 minutes the last game, but they started him over Patty Mills, excuse me. And the thing about DeJounte Murray is, if you want to talk about like being able to stop a 3-point shooting offense, put a 6'5 point guard out there who's super long and athletic and put him next to Kawhi Leonard. Of course they're going to take away all their shooting, right? It just makes perfect sense. And of course Pop is going to figure this out. We could look back in a couple of years and realize that DeJounte Murray, I don't know about his offensive game. I don't think he is particularly a good shooter, but we could look back in a few years and it would be completely normal that he would be like the steal of the draft, right? Would anyone be surprised?
So just kind of, you know, circle back on that. I just, Joe and I, my co-host over at Inside the Cylinder, we had an episode a few weeks ago on the upcoming draft. And we were talking about these kind of players that are a little risky that you're not really sure if you should pick them up at, you know, where the Pistons are picking, where they're drafting, you know, at the end of the lottery. And Joe said something along the lines of, if this guy, you know, if player A gets drafted by the Magic, you're like, okay, he's screwed. They're going to ruin his career.
Yes.
So, but if he's a guy that, you know, falls to the Spurs and the Spurs pick him up, it's kind of a situation where everyone's looking around like, oh no, what did we just do? Like, who did we just skip on? And you know, it's just that type of thing. It's just so Spursian and Poppian where it's like, yeah, he's going to turn around and be this beast. And I mean, Murray was supposed to go a lot higher than he did in that draft. I think that he was projected to be almost like a top 10 pick, and he fell all the way down to the Spurs. And it's just something where it's kind of scary. And you're right, Joe. I don't think that I wouldn't be surprised. And I don't think, you know, most people would be surprised just with their track record.
Yeah. I mean, look at Kawhi Leonard. People use this analogy all the time. Like if Kawhi Leonard had gone to the Magic, you would not even be hearing about him. His career would be ruined. And I feel bad for all the guys that come in with a lot of potential, like Hezonja, Mario Hezonja, when he came in, everybody was like, this kid's going to be really good. He has Kobe's mentality and he can shoot. And he went to the wrong freaking team, man. Aaron Gordon has been wasted there. Like you know, I still think that kid has a lot of potential, but he'll never be able to realize it. Cause it's just a shit show down there. I'm sorry, Magic fans. I know you're going to hate me for this, but
like, they know it. They know it. They have to know it.
They have to know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it happens all the time. And like, yeah, the Spurs are just good at this, man. They're just, I mean, RC Buford's been there for how many years now? 20, 30, 40. How long am I alive? So like, I remember a time when he wasn't there. And they just do this consistently every year. Now I'm not saying this series is over, and I'm hoping that Houston comes back and takes another game and makes it. I would love to see a seven game series out of this. Because listen, I'm pretty sure we're all considering that it's a foregone conclusion. It's going to be Cleveland and the Warriors in the championship again, right?
Yeah, just how do we get there?
Right. Like, and I think,
what does it look like?
Exactly. And I think there's so much fun to be had in the meantime. So yes. I'm really rooting for that to be a good series. But what does Houston need to do now? How can they? We saw Pop came and made his adjustments. Does Houston make adjustments? Can they make adjustments? And what do they need to do?
I think, you know, what they need to do is just keep it going with what they do. They're not a team they're a team that inflicts their will and they either win or lose, you know, based on it. You know, live by the three, die by the three.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's who they are. And that's what they just need to keep on doing. What they do need is they need, you know, Lou Williams to not go over and 0 points off the bench. They probably need more than 10 points off the bench in totality, especially when you have, you know, two of your guys, Eric Gordon and Lou Williams, are going to be essentially 1 and 2 in the voting for sixth man of the year.
Yeah.
You'll need a lot more contribution than that. And I mean, what they've been doing, the San Antonio, it's just kind of like James Harden's going to feast, and we just have to contain the rest of the players and, you know, try and close out on these threes. And, you know, I mean, their defensive adjustments, we've already just talked about that. But I just think that they just need to keep doing what they're doing, because they're not really a team that – I haven't seen Houston or really any D'Antoni types of teams kind of mix it up that much. Now, will there be a player maybe, a substitution here and there? Possibly, but I don't think that that's something that's going to be the game changer. I think the game changer is that the ball just needs to find the bottom of the net. And I'm really hoping that this series goes 7. I was one of them that I thought Houston was going to win in 6.
Mm-hmm.
Even after the major blowout, I don't think pop teams lose in 5 games or 6 games.
No,
you know, I think,
yeah.
or you know, in 4 games. They don't get swept. They don't lose in 5. So that's my mentality. I just think that they just need to keep it moving and, you know, have James Harden be James Harden, but also at the same time just find the bottom of the net, because they're not a team that scores 90 points. They need to get into like the mid 100s to be, you know, doing what they do best.
Absolutely. And, you know, on the defensive side of things, I know that D'Antoni's offenses are the thing. His teams are not known for defense, but they actually were. I think they finished in the top 10 in defense, or top 15 in defense this year, which is surprising. And Patrick Beverley really is their defensive spark plug, right?
Yeah.
You can't stop Kawhi by yourself. You can't stop him with just Patrick Beverley because he's just, you know, not big enough. Kawhi is just a monster. But you can put other guys on him. You can try and take him away and see if the rest of that team can beat you. I mean, we know that the Spurs are getting old. They don't have the offensive firepower that they did. And they're, you know, I think that Houston can probably lock in on D a little bit more, make it more of a priority. But yeah, you're right. Ultimately, it depends on their shooting. If they keep hitting threes the way they've done all season, from like 3 feet beyond the 3-point line, I think there's, you know, they could take the series.
I still think Houston has a shot to win this. You know, it's essentially, if they win next game, they're on serve. Well, they're not on. I mean, they're down. You know, I guess they're not really. They're essentially on serve. They just need to break. It's just kind of something like that, where they need to, you know, they're obviously going to have to win another game in San Antonio because they already lost the home court advantage that they had just gained. So, but I think that they can do it. I really do. I think that they're a team. I think James Harden is that good. He's both your and my MVP for this year.
Correct.
He's the correct MVP
for the year.
He is the correct MVP for the year. And you know, I just think that it's gonna be a good series, and I don't think it's over. I think Houston wins game 4, and you know, we'll just see how it plays out. But I don't see the Rockets changing much up, and honestly, I don't see I think the Spurs have kind of figured out their best, you know, lineups and their best sort of, you know, their best strategy moving forward. Obviously, taking David Lee out of the starting lineup is a nice, you know, first step. So I think that that's the type of stuff, and you're just going to kind of see these two teams battle it out from there, because that was a pretty close game for the most part. And it was just, you know, can James Harden single-handedly win this one? And the answer was no. So,
not in that one, but I think he can still do it, obviously.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think it's going to be something where it's definitely going to be going, I think, at least 6 games. But I think this one possibly goes 7 as well.
I don't think I've called a winner on this, but I'm going to say it right now. I'm going to say Houston in 7. That's what I'm going for.
I said Houston in 6 overall, so at first, so I'm going to stick to Houston. I'm just going to say Houston in 7 now, just because I don't think that Houston's going to win.
Solidarity, what, bro.
3 of their next 4?
Yeah, right.
Well, 3 cool. in a row. Sorry.
Yeah, it would be 3 in a row. That's whatever. It's fine. It's you know, it's only 2:00 in the afternoon on Sunday. Do you want to talk about Cleveland, Toronto? So I'm going to just read what I wrote to you about this, which was, yeah, I don't know, man. I think we can talk about Cleveland, Toronto, but what I said to you was that, like, they've lured us over the season. Cleveland has, I think, lured us all into a false sense of hope because of their defense was so poor that they could actually be beat. And then they just smashed all our faces against the Rock. And like, no, you're not going to beat us. They're going to, I think, you know, they're obviously going to sweep. I think it's a foregone conclusion. They are going to sweep Toronto.
Good.
Yeah. Toronto, the one team that everyone thought was built to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, and then, you know, there's all of this, you know, conversation and all of this speculation, like PJ Tucker, like that's going to be the fix, him and Serge.
Right.
It's like, in what world does that stop LeBron James? I don't know if we just kind of lull ourselves to sleep with LeBron James consistently scoring 25 points, you know, having 8 rebounds and 7 assists. But I don't forget that. I never forget that LeBron James still is the best player in the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to talk about this series a little bit more just because I think that this is one of those series where it's like, what were we thinking? And what was, you know, basketball Twitter going off about for Toronto? You know, and they were thinking that they were going to be somewhat of a better, you know, matchup in general for this team. I don't know. I just think it's something where, like, LeBron James is like, no, you're all crazy. I'm going to spin this ball in Serge Ibaka's face twice and then just wet a three-pointer. And that's what I'm going to do to you. So, like, and I'm going to
hit. And you can't stop
dunks
it.
Off, and yeah, I'm going to have dunks off the backboard from Kyrie. Like,
3 minutes into the game. Three, like,
yeah,
off the backboard.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like, what?
That's why I love this series. It's like, no, LeBron, I hope you win. I hope LeBron and the Cavs win this next game by 35 points and LeBron has 50. Like, I couldn't care less if Toronto gets put to bed. you know, I don't think that they're that fun of a team to watch in general. I love Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
But like the Toronto Raptors are, you know, they're just kind of chokers. That is really who they are when it comes down to it. So I'm all about, you know, Cavaliers just kind of destroying them and then moving on. And then hopefully it being a little bit more of a series in the next one.
I think this team is better than last year.
I do too.
Their defense may have been, it may be worse throughout the season, but it wasn't great last year either. And this year they've added Kyle Korver. They still have, Channing Frye playing, you know, really good really? Minutes when he comes in, and he's hitting threes all over the place. They're just such a deep team. I don't know, man. It's going to be, I think we all can just look forward to the finals. Can we just cut to the finals?
Yeah, I know, right? But one thing I want to say just about this Cleveland team compared to last year's team, like Kevin Love was kind of just an enigma out there last year,
mm-hmm.
where this year he's really has found his role. Really does, like he doesn't look like, he's not tentative when he's shooting the ball. He's, you know, he has that ability to kind of take over, you know, 5-10 minute sort of spurts. He's really, I think that's going to be a big difference maker. Just for the Cavaliers. I don't think that, you know, I still think the Warriors are going to win when it's all said and done. But I do think it'll be pretty competitive. And I do think that, you know, just having Kevin Love just be comfortable in his role on this team and to kind of have, you know, the monkey off his back from last season being the scapegoat for everything that went bad with the Cavaliers will be good for the team moving forward. And, yeah, I think it's just something where, you know, all of the conversation leading up to the playoffs was, oh, I don't know, Cleveland looks kind of rocky. You know, they're the 2 seed coming in now. Like, it's like, come on, what are we talking about here? It's LeBron James.
I know, seriously. Like, LeBron James is the MVP of the league for the last 10 years, at least. He's going to go to his 7th. If Washington or Boston can knock them off, it would be a freaking miracle. I just don't see it. Literally, like, I would be waiting for a bomb to drop and we'll all die after that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, yeah. Then, you know, if Washington or Boston beats, you know, Cleveland, you know, for a fact that Trump did something to Kim Jong-un and we all got to get going. Me and you are in the Eastern Seaboard. So we're screwed.
We're screwed. We're totally screwed. Oh man. Either that or like aliens are landing or we really are living in an alternate universe or something. Like this is not right. Sure. This is not the right outcome. This is an alternate. Yeah. Oh boy. Anyway, speaking of Washington and Boston. So, I wanted to talk about this game, this series last, because this one actually has turned into a really fun series. And I don't know why I didn't see this coming. I mean, we sort of all did, right? Because they've been so chippy playing each other throughout the whole season. We had the funeral game when Washington dressed all in black leading up to the game and like just goofy stuff, but it was fun. And now we get Kelly on Kelly violence. I love it. Let's start there. Did you see the hit that Oubre put on Olynyk?
I've watched every second of this series so far.
Really?
So yeah, I did. Yeah.
Nice.
I did. I was, you know, kind of surprised with Kelly Olynyk's ability to kind of see it coming at the last second, but still give a full 100% flop effort getting in like absorbing the hit.
That was impressive.
It was really impressive, but no, I saw it all happen, and you know, it was just one of those situations where Kelly Oubre kind of looked like the kid that threw a temper tantrum during recess, and he just kind of lost control at a second. Yeah. So I felt bad for him in that moment. Like I like Kelly Oubre as a player, so
yeah, same.
But you know, the moment got to him. I don't think he should have been suspended though.
I agree, because he didn't throw an elbow. He just like, and Olynyk flopped, man. He didn't even knock down the ref. But he sent Olynyk flying. Come on, give me a break. That was a total flop. And I think it was more just a teaching point for the league, basically saying, don't lose your temper. We can't have this happen. This isn't just about what you did. This is about we're putting everybody on notice. You cannot do this. So I get that. And I feel really bad for Olynyk. I mean, it wasn't a dirty pick, right? I don't think
that one wasn't. No, the one before was.
Yeah, I mean, Olynyk is a dirty player. And by the way, speaking of dirty, somebody needs to show that kid how to shave his beard and cut his hair, because he looks gross. I can't stand looking at him. It's disgusting. Like, I want somebody to take a lawnmower and just go over his head, like, not to hurt him, just shave his hair.
I go to a lot of Celtics games because I live in Boston, and I'm always surrounded by Celtics fans, obviously, and I'm either indifferent or rooting for the Pistons depending on which game I'm going to.
Right.
And I'm always in the stands just like laughing at Kelly Olynyk, just anything he does, like Kelly for three. And he's always like, you know, Kelly Olynyk's kind of like, he's a frustrating player because he'll have one possession where he just deserves to be the poster boy for Shaqt and a Fool.
Yeah.
And then he'll have the next possession, he'll have, you know, a solid three or a nice, like, sort of, you know, turnaround bank shot or something like that. And he'll always, every game I go to, I'm there laughing at Kelly Olynyk half the time, and I'll look up at the box score and he'll have 17 points on, you know, 4 of 9 from the floor or something. And it's like, what the hell? What just happened? I thought I was laughing the whole time. How did you score this many points?
Exactly. And Brad Stevens trusts him for whatever reason. I don't know. Like, I'm totally with you. He looks like he shouldn't be doing anything out there. And yet, in a similar way to Marcus Smart, like I tweeted this out too, and you totally disagree with me that Marcus Smart is a douche. But if he was on my team, I would totally love him, because he does those little things that, like, he is the team player, right? He'll hit a three in a really important moment. He'll get a defensive stop in a really important play. For the most part, I just don't see what his game is, and I don't see how he's succeeding. And he makes me really angry because he's cheap too. Like, he'll lay some freaking hurt on some people just when they don't even see it coming, because he's really big for a guard.
And he's a flopper too.
Oh God, yeah. But, and also,
I just love Marcus Smart. I don't know. I mean, I really like this Boston Celtics team, honestly. Like, they're one of my favorite teams to watch. I think part of it's because I've watched so many games of theirs. But
yeah,
I don't know. I just kind of like the collection of players that they have. They all kind of have a chip on their shoulder. And I think it was for Marcus Smart, for me, it all stems from the incident when he was in college where he kind of
jumped into the stands and beat the crap out of some kid. Is that
no he didn't beat the crap. No, it was like some old, like, just like they were in the South somewhere, probably. I think it was like a Kansas State game or something like that, and he went into the crowd and on like a layup, and then like this like old fat white dude said something to him, and to me it was just like, oh, you said something bad, didn't you? And then Marcus Smart lost it, and I was always on his side after that, like, just because it's like, you know, I don't want that to kind of define you, and I don't want your draft stock to plummet because of that sort of incident. And so ever since then, and then also at the same time, he's a player, like you said, if he's on your team, you would love him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he just does everything. He's laying out on the floor. He's diving into the stands. He's, you know, just, I don't know. He's like a Patrick Beverley type of player in the sense of he'll do anything for the win.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, I have to be fair because, yeah, if he was on the Sixers, man, he would be one of my favorite players. But he's on the Celtics, so I hate his guts. That's not true. I don't hate him. But, yeah, and it's, you know what? I remember that, too. I was sort of on his side. Like, he lost his cool. You shouldn't have that, you know, mar your career. But also, you know, in his defense, if somebody dropped an N-bomb on him, that dude should be smacked. That dude should be
for sure
racked upside the head. Like, give him a bow.
Exactly.
Seriously, like, there's no room for that shit in our world anymore.
Completely agree.
So anyways, Marcus Smart's fun.
Yeah, so no. Going to IT, Isaiah, you want to talk about him?
Yeah, let's talk about Isaiah. Listen, Isaiah Thomas has quickly become one of my favorite players in the league this year. And I've always liked him. When he was on Sacramento. There we go. I'm getting my S's mixed up. I really thought he was a good player there, too, and I couldn't believe when they traded him, right? Or let him go. I forget which one it was. I think they
did. Yeah, I mean, I think it was something that it was like a him versus Boogie kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, one of the guys need the ball in their hands and they got to go with one of them. And, you know, they crazily, they chose the wrong guy.
But, yeah, I know, right?
They did.
I can see. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Imagine what Isaiah Thomas is a hero in Boston right now, but imagine what he would be in Sacramento if he was doing this on that team. If he could get that team into the playoffs. They don't even have Boogie anymore now, like, because he's such a jerk. I'm just saying, I don't know him personally. I'm not saying he's personally a jerk, but as a teammate, it seems like he really is.
For sure.
But Isaiah Thomas, man, he's been so much fun to watch. He is unstoppable. And he's going up against John Wall, who's one of the best defensive point guards in the league. John Wall is amazing. He's one of the best shot-blocking point guards, I think, of all time. He's so fast. He's really good defensively. And still, Isaiah Thomas is getting around him and getting to the rim. And just like, getting his shot off from wherever he wants, and he's doing it at 5'9".
No, it's because Isaiah Thomas is a great story. He's one of my favorite players to watch. Everything he's been going through is, I could not speak higher of him. His character is top notch.
Yeah.
The city of Boston loves him. He's reaching like Brady level sort of godliness in this city.
So anyway, do you think this – we haven't talked about Washington at all. We're already – I'm going to have to cut a lot of this out because we're talking so much, which is fine. I enjoy it. What do you think? Who do you think wins this series ultimately? Do you think – because the Wizards just won the last game by, what, 26, I think it was? They spanked them. They've won almost all of – I think Boston has won three of the entire however many quarters of play we've had so far. Surprisingly, they're you know, ahead 2-1. I don't know if they can keep this up. I think that the backcourt of John Wall and Bradley Beal is just so unique and so, like, John Wall is so fast. He can get to the rim at will, and he's just such an amazing passer. And when you have Bradley Beal, who's so smooth, can also get to the rim and shoot from anywhere, Boston has the perfect complement to that. They have some really good defensive players on the outside in their backcourt. But I just think that Washington has a little bit of an edge. I don't think that the total sum of all of Boston's parts are really all that good. What are your thoughts?
I have Boston winning in seven.
Really?
I think it goes seven for sure. And I really hope it does, because if it does, I get free tickets. But I do think that it goes seven. And I do think that Boston takes it home. I think home court advantage, honestly, will be a big thing in that particular game. I agree. I think that the firepower for Washington's a lot better. I think they have the best players are on that team. I think if they're able to to kind of inflict either a switch or for some reason, Boston cannot put Isaiah Thomas back on Otto Porter anymore.
Yeah, that turned out to be a disaster.
That little back down that he had right in the middle of the paint to it's literally like he was playing against a middle schooler.
Yeah.
Like he was just, it was so easy for him. It looked like he was just doing it for fun. It didn't even look like it was in a game. He was just that little like step back two pointer turnaround. You know, he just had it all day long. Otto Porter could hit that in his sleep. So
yeah,
they can't run that out there.
No.
So I think if they can get that switch, possibly they can make it a little bit, maybe Washington wins that one. But I do think with the depth that Boston has, that is going to be a big difference maker, and all those guards that you can throw, and hopefully, if you're a Boston fan, tire out Wall and Beal.
Yeah, it's just that, like, what you just said was exactly correct. Like, they went with the option of putting, because you have to hide Isaiah Thomas somewhere, right? You can't hide him on John Wall. He's going to get roasted every day. And on Beal, he's just going to get roasted. He can't guard those guys.
I would rather live with Isaiah Thomas on Wall, honestly.
Yeah.
Because that way you're at least, because Wall, of the three players that we're talking about, has the not as strong of an outside shot as Beal and Porter. So I would rather live with, you know, either sitting back a little bit if you're Isaiah and, you know, tempting the 3-point shot from Wall And if it goes, maybe let that kill you. But you can't let, you know, a foot advantage, you know, in size with Porter be the thing that stops you.
Because Porter has a nice three-point shot right from the corner. And he's really good at it. But that's about the only shot he could hit. They made him look like an offensive genius out there on Isaiah Thomas. You cannot have that happen again. It's just not going to end well, obviously.
Go check out Inside the Cylinder. We're on the same network. Almighty Baller. I have a piece coming out with Detroit Bad Boys. I'm pretty excited about looking at the upcoming draft for the Pistons, where they'd be picking possibly at the number 12 spot. So, you know, if you're a draft junkie and you want some player profiles, or if you're you know, a Pistons fan, obviously definitely check that out. It should be coming out sometime this week. But other than that, no, I'm you know, equally excited about a couple of these series. And yeah, I will, you know, hopefully talk some finals, some Golden State Cleveland, because it is going to happen. That's what's going to be. That's what's going to be the finals matchup, obviously.
For sure. I totally agree with that. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. It was always, you know, it's always good to talk to you. And I'm sorry I had to draw, you know, pull you away from your other podcast, because you're such a big star now. But thanks for.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Thanks for taking the time to come on.
All good, man. Yeah. All right. Take care, Rez.
Well, there you go, everybody. David Fernandez. Thanks again, David, for coming on. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.